Whoa! Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh, I don't even know where to start. Okay. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And Trump, well, to my knowledge, actually, Trump, this is the second trip to Mexico City. The first being, well, I took him, right? I took him on my socks. Those of you who follow the Sam Nation Instagram will remember that I took Trump on a little excursion myself deep into hostile territory. And I'd like to take some credit for Trump's recent foray into international diplomacy, because as I reported to you on this program, my socks were met not with the kind of rebuke you would think if you were exclusively a Clinton News Network consumer. That's right. You know, if you were to take everything from woe to you if CNN is your sole place for current events. Because, well, I tell you, just one good example of this is the day that news broke. We don't realize is that the trip down to Mexico was brokered on very short notice, and it was not Trump grandstanding. I'm sick and tired of hearing this because there was an invitation by the president of Mexico to both candidates, and Trump was just the one candidate that took him up on it. Now, the media doesn't like that, of course, because it made Hillary look bad, who was busy giving a speech at the same time to what? To the Foreign Legion. Not putting down the Foreign Legion, but it's, you know, it's basically like giving a lecture at a community college while your opponent is delivering a primetime address in Manhattan. So, what happened? Trump gets down there, and the first thing that I remember seeing on CNN, I'm walking through a lobby, and I stop full halt stop in my tracks, because I'm looking over, and there's a TV screen up on the wall, and the sound is turned off, but the headline on the TV screen is campaign insider says that trip is nothing more than a photo op. And I had to go about some business because, you know, I have other things going on in my life besides just this program. I wish it weren't so, but it's true. So I had to go about my day. And as soon as I had a few minutes, probably within the hour, I scanned all the news sites, you know, all the suspects from the more liberal to the more conservative from fiction to, yeah, anyway. So I found no mention of it anywhere. There's no follow up. CNN dropped that and then abandoned it almost instantly. So somebody somewhere, first thing they put up on the screen is they try to discredit the trip as a mere photo op and are citing some source inside the Trump campaign, and it turns out to be total BS. And how do I know that? Because if that were true, boy, that would be the lead story of the entire night. That is all CNN would be talking about. And by the time I checked back in with the Clinton News Network, all that I saw was something along the lines of Trump tells President of Mexico that it's our right to build a wall or something along those lines. All right. So look, if you're just tuning in, we're going to talk about this Trump speech in Mexico and the fallout that has followed since. I want to get into it a little bit here because I think this week has been the ultimate turning point in Trump's campaign. It goes to Hillary. The basis for her campaign has always been, up until this point, he can't be trusted. He's unfit to lead. Hillary's campaign has certain key talking points, and they're not very sexy, okay? They're not, but her number one talking point is Trump's lack of fitness as a leader, as his undiplomatic approach. And the upside, of course, to this event is, you know, as I'm watching it, because I did, as soon as it became apparent that he was going to speak, I did, ladies and gentlemen, drop everything so I could be your faithful servant and report to you exactly what I saw as it was happening. Well, of course, now we're a few days later, but I did see it as it happened. And I wanted to see it live because I didn't want to be colored. I didn't want my opinion or perception of it to be colored by anybody else's insipid comments. Because that's what happens. You know, you don't always get to see something live, and then you're reading all the coverage, and other people's opinions begin to influence your own. And you listen to this program, and what we believe here is forming our own opinions based on facts. So, we don't really deal with the feelings as much as our friends on the left do. But at any rate, so there we were. I'm watching him on TV, and I've got to start having a small group gather in the office because it was that captivating. I'm telling you, if you didn't see it, it was captivating. There was Trump. There was this green marble background there in the presidential palace in Mexico City. He's standing next to the president of Mexico, and Trump. What first the Mexican president delivers his remarks, and you know it was all political speak. I mean, it was political speak, but he didn't say anything but nice things about Trump. He said what you expect the president of a sovereign country to say. He stuck up for his people. He said, "Look, my job is to take care of Mexican citizens." No matter where they are. And that, of course, is a dig saying that, you know, it's his role to look out for Mexicans, even if those Mexicans happen to be in the United States. And so he got all, but in all of his comments, they were very complimentary. And we're hearing them, you know, we're hearing them through the interpreter. And then Trump begins to speak, and I pretty much guarantee that the Clinton people were following it very closely, and I promise you that there was widespread depression in the Clinton ranks almost instantly as soon as Trump began speaking in that press conference, because there he is. Now, the imagery is important. But all that dismissiveness about it just being a photo op, about just being some setup, you know, pictures, meet and greet, private meeting, that's it. Nonsense. What that was Trump standing up there with the Mexican seal behind him, Mexican flags, with the leader, president, elected official of Mexico, an elected leader of Mexico, being respectful, being humble, listening, presidential. He was 100%. There was Trump acting like a president. And I'll tell you what else he was doing. And this is the crucial takeaway from it. Trump went there, was able to be respectful. Clearly, it was clear from the body language and from what was said by President of Mexico that they built a relationship over the course of the several hours or whatever it was the time that they met preceding the news conference. So he was able to build a relationship with the guy, but he didn't capitulate on anything. I mean, the first thing that the talking heads, even on Fox, are saying after, well, he's capitulated. He didn't talk about funding the. He said he didn't talk about funding the wall. It's a major point of his. I mean, let me put this into perspective. He goes there. He travels to Mexico. He sticks up his 5 points, which I'm going to go over in a minute. when we come back, the 5 points, he lays out all his, everything he's been saying. Border security, border wall. NAFTA needs to be redrafted to help our workers. And he says it all. He holds his ground, but at the same time is able to establish a respectful relationship with this leader. And I don't know about you, but for me, that's a breath of fresh air, because the only kind of diplomacy Obama knows is capitulation. I mean, he just, first 3 years of his presidency was an apology tour. And since then, there's nothing of substance that ever comes out of his mouth. It's very easy to go somewhere and to meet an opponent, meet somebody who might be an adversary, and to woo him by giving everything up. That's the kind of diplomacy we're engaged in. What do you think John Kerry does? He goes, travels around the world on our dime, flying around in a giant plane, dropping in left and right and saying, I'm sorry. And by the way, here, let me give away the store. Trump shows up, says, no, I'm holding firm on these things. You know, these are real issues, but here is common ground where we agree on. And heck, it's a great starting point. And both men leave that meeting saying that. This is a great starting point. We have a relationship. And the meeting concludes with Trump saying, I call you a friend. I'm telling you, this is Hillary Clinton's worst nightmare. So when we come back, I want to talk about the 5-point plan. I want to talk a little bit about what this means for the campaign. And also, all this nonsense about Trump why he should have asked them to pay for the wall. Hillary Clinton does that. Hi, my name's Hillary. Pay me. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KBC. Back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
All right. We're back. Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. So I'm telling you, the polls take time to catch up with current events, especially the polls that are weighted. And I always hate to get too far into these polls, but I promise you, you've got to trust me on this. People across the fruited plain, they're Trump-zitioning. Is that a word? Well, we got Trumposexuals, right? We've got Trumpists. Why can't we have people Trump-zitioning? The thing about it is, every news story you look at, it's a lot of guffawing by the drive-by media talking about how Trump, there's no way that, you know, he has outreach to the communities. Minority communities is just fallen flat. And it's funny because I in these stories, and I'm listening to these different political theorists out there, and what they're saying is, by and large, look, Trump, you know, and his overtures to the black community is painting all blacks as poor and stupid and uneducated, right? Trump just thinks all black people are the same. And this is the same media, and these are the same demagogues that have for years, you know, treated minorities as Hispanics. Oh, those racist Republicans, they hate you, Hispanic people. That's right. I mean, that's absurd. The Democratic Party has put people in boxes, has put people in buckets, if you will, separated us by race, creed, and origin since the beginning of time. This is the Democratic Party. This is the modern Democratic Party is a party of division, always has been. Creating groups, special interest categories, dividing us based off of our disabilities or our weaknesses or our socioeconomic status, those rich people and such forth, okay? So all of a sudden now, it's Trump that's getting criticized for it, which makes me, it always makes me think that there is a real fear on the left that what Trump is doing might work. And, you know, there's a group out there, the Latinos for Trump. And, you know, there is a group. It's not really being reported on too heavily. But their premise, the premise of this group is that painting Hispanics, of course, with a broad brush as one giant monolithic group of people is silly. Of course it's silly. And I've always suspected this, you know, just intuitively from talking to people in the community. Look, I've grown up in Southern California. I'm not playing the game. How many Hispanics? You know, of course, everybody here is Hispanic. So many people. So we and you know that there is a tremendous amount of diversity among Hispanics as a group. They're small business owners. Okay. Is that small business owner voting based on the color of his skin, or are they voting based off of real economic policy that may or may not significantly affect their business and their ability to earn an income, a living for their family? Hmm? Really? Because if you listen to the Democrats, they're going to tell you no. I mean, the guy who owns a business, he's voting based on his skin color. Racist Trump. He's going to vote for Hillary. It's interesting. I couldn't disagree more. And so the same goes. You've got Hispanics who are deeply religious. Okay? They're pro-life. How is this a monolithic group exclusively beholden to the Democratic Party? I don't get it. I don't see it. The fact of the matter is that there is a richly diverse, there are, as a segment of society, Hispanics are richly diverse, just the same as blacks are. And of course, whites. I mean, gosh, it's like saying, wow, whites are voting as a group. It's nonsense. It is absolute nonsense. And I'm telling you, the poll numbers are going to start to tighten. And I don't know if now it's old hat. You know, it happened over a week ago, but I didn't get to it last program, and I wanted to because, well, you heard about the new leader of the Black Panther Party, the new Black Panther Party. So he gives an interview, and he got almost no coverage, none, zero, zip from the drive-by media. And it gets picked up by, you know, Breitbart and a few other fringe alt-right news sites. So what happened? This guy's name is Quinnell X. And he's discussing Republican nominee Donald Trump's appearance in Milwaukee. And this we covered this extensively on the program a couple weeks back, talking about the race riots. And if you recall, Trump gave an excellent, excellent press conference, and he was very forthright and honest with what was going on in the subject of race and looking around at who the real culprits are causing mayhem. And the issue being, of course, that, hey, these people rioting out in the street, this is unacceptable. It's unacceptable behavior. It's not part of our political discourse. And it's and the causes for it are not police aggression and oppression by the white man, but rather a total breakdown, cultural breakdown in black communities. Moreover, Trump made, and I think read very devastatingly, the true point that it is Democratic Party policies since 1960 that have done more to erode the black family than anything else. Supplanting, for example, the role of a father with the welfare state, right? The father no longer needed to provide an income because mom can just go and apply for a whole bunch of welfare. Now, of course, this has devastated working white families, too. But there, of course, you can't use the same kind of demagoguery that you can with the black community. And the Democrats have exploited this. They've created the problem. And then and then, of course, gone back to the same communities that they've devastated and drawn on them, right, for political support, for votes, and such. And so here is what Quinnell X says. He says, look, the black community has been loyal to the Democratic Party. And that the problem is the Democratic Party has not given them back the same kind of loyalty. He says, we as black people have to re-examine the relationship, meaning the relationship with the Democratic Party. We're being, and these are his words, not mine, we are being pimped out like prostitutes. And they're the big pimps, meaning the Democrats, pimping us politically, promising us everything, and we get nothing in return. And he continues, we got to step back now as black people, and we got to look at all the parties and vote our best interests. He went on to say that, you know, hey, look, blacks may not like Trump, but they still need to listen to him. He says, Donald Trump decided to go to Milwaukee and speak about the conditions in America and why he thought black people should vote for him. He even, talking about Trump, he even went on to lay out reasons why we should. And here's what Quinnell X says. This is a direct plea. And I'm telling you, there is a ground shift occurring in America. When was the last time you heard a Republican candidate for president, the Republican Party nominee, being spoken of by a Black Panther in anything but this is the first quasi-endorsement by a radical minority group leader of a Republican nominee. And so he says, let me say this to the brothers and sisters who listened and watched that speech. We may not like the vessel that said what he said, talking about Trump being the vessel, you know, but I ask you to truly examine what he said. And this is it. It you know, ultimately, life comes down, the cultural life in America comes down to truth. It has to ring true, what you're saying. And like no other political cycle that I have ever witnessed in my lifestyle, in my life, we've got people talking about real issues, and it's because Trump is saying them. He's not afraid to say things that are direct, that are forthright, that are honest. And the media, you know, of course, they're taking snippets of it. And every time Trump gives a speech, of course, you almost cringe. You realize, you know, that's exactly the one snippet that they're going to take and blow out of proportion. But he does it anyway. And so there he was in Mexico, with the president of Mexico, standing up there, and he laid down everything that needed to happen. He talked about the wall that needs to be built to protect our border, that there are people on both sides of the border that are suffering as a result of a drug trade and human trafficking. You know, he brought something up that was really important. Mexico suffers too when you have a porous border, because it's the drugs flowing up from Mexico into the U.S. that is creating an enormous amount of crime, a lot more crime on their side of the border than ours. And although I firmly think no wall is going to stop that, it may slow it down. It may help in some areas. It may mitigate it completely. And it's not just something that benefits the U.S. And he spoke against NAFTA, and he explained how American workers need that protection. And I'm telling you, this gets traction. Okay, what do you do when you want to play football in Syria? And by football, I mean soccer. Which rules apply? That's a head scratcher for you. Come back after the break. I've got a great story for you. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Goal! That's right! Isn't that what they yell in a soccer game? Football? Sorry. You know, I'm from Europe. We call it football. But apparently, we do everything different here. So it's soccer in the U.S. and football everywhere else. Did you know that they do play soccer in Syria? Or at least they did. And now ISIS has, ISIS is this group that tries to control just about everything because they adhere to Orthodox Islam and Sharia law. And so they ran into a little bit of a problem because every game requires a referee, right? I mean, that's the premise of a sport. There are rules, got to follow rules of engagement. And these rules are propagated and promulgated by FIFA, the International Soccer Federation. And apparently, these FIFA rules were completely in violation of the commandments of Allah. Now, it's mysterious to me because I don't know what Allah has to do with football, soccer. But apparently, the Islamic State sends out these monitors to come out to the field, and we're just in total shock as the game was being called based on the FIFA rules, meaning like the real legitimate rules of soccer. And they decided right then and there to bring in, I don't know. So now there's Sharia law, and there's some Islamic jurisprudent court now that's going to decide the outcome of games. You know, can you imagine if this kind of nonsense made its way into the U.S.? They're trying. I mean, they're trying. I don't know what. I wonder what Sweet James would do. He takes people to real court. You know, no Sharia court nonsense. In fact, I'll tell you, and I was just talking to him about this. It's important that you know this. You know, you'd think that there would be a lot of confrontation in these cases. You know, that there'd be a lot of court time, that these, you know, you get into an accident and you call Sweet James and he has to go all Perry Mason on the other party. And you know what? That's actually not true. You know, by and large, these cases settle. They settle amicably. But they settle because there's a threat. There's a threat. And James Burner is the guy that can go full Perry Mason on people, and he has. The insurance company's got a taste of it and decided, not today. And that's all it takes. And you don't want to be the guy that tries to do it himself. Don't be a do-it-yourselfer. That is only cool on Saturdays and Sundays when you're walking around Home Depot looking to impress your spouse with your Weekend Warrior project. It's not going to impress anyone when it comes to your case. And I've got a great illustration about this. So just hear me out because it's a great story and it really does capture this. I was talking to James the other day and there's an employee that had was an accident and it was a terrible situation. Her father passed away in a car accident. And now she's worked at the firm for years, so she knows exactly what to do, who to call, how to call them. You know, she knows what forms to fill out. She knows all the stuff that you need to figure a case out. She knows it. And so she decides to call the insurance company and try to get them to be fair. I mean, it was a relatively small insurance policy. Clearly, the loss of her father was worth way more than the policy. And what happened? She calls, and they denied her case. They denied it. So she said, look, I gave it a try, and turns it over to the firm. A letter goes out, a few phone calls, and all of a sudden, the insurance company has changed their position. And what it is, let me tell you, it's simple. They know who Sweet James is. They know he's going to go all the way. He knows he's going to take the fight to their doorstep, and they want no part of it. No fuss, no hassle, just a few letters, and a God done. And so don't try to do it alone. I'm telling you, this is important. And the other thing is, and remember this, be sure you're the one picking your lawyer. Don't let your lawyer pick you. Because, you know, there's lawyers out there that will call you out of the blue, and they got referred by somebody, and, you know, there's kickbacks going. Don't go to an ambulance chaser. You want a professional. You want a good guy. You want a team you can trust. And that's Sweet James Bergner. So give him a call. I know I went long on this, but it's a good story, right? What happened to that gal? 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021, or go to sweetjames.com. All right, we're back. We're talking about Trump. We're talking about Trump's trip and immigration, Mexico. And I'll tell you, I mentioned last segment that there are many among us, our friends, our acquaintances, perhaps our coworkers, even maybe some family members, who after this week might be in full Trumpsition. That is, transitioning from either being Democrats, and there's a movement, right? There's a movement afoot, the Trump Democrats. Now, I predict that you know, and in history there have been time periods where you had the Reagan Democrats. You had Kennedy Republicans. And I predict that we will look back at this era and that will actually be a term. There'll be a term. There'll be Trump Democrats. People that had enough. And who are they? They're exactly the people that are totally fine with Trump going to Mexico, talking to the Mexican president. You know, the media tries to label these Rust Belt white lower income voters as being racists. They don't, and it's so offensive. It's so offensive because these people aren't racist, but they're a little pissed about the fact that for the last 18 years, they haven't gotten a raise. The economy's in decline. Their jobs are disappearing to China and elsewhere. They're upset that they are not able to even provide the same standard of living that their parents were able to provide. And so to dismiss these folks as being racists, bigots, KKK supporters and the like is tone deaf. It's plain and simple. The more the Democrats miss the boat on this completely, the better it is, the more likely it is that Hillary's going to lose this race. You have to understand the premise of the game, the rules of engagement. You can't play soccer based on Sharia law. That's nonsense. And Hillary's trying to win a gunfight with a knife. She's literally, all she's got is the same tired cliches of the right being racist scumbags. I'm telling you, none of these Trump supporters over here looking at what happened in Mexico, mind him. They don't hate Mexicans. They're protective of their job. And he's traveled to Mexico, is respectful of the Mexican president, is building a relationship with the Mexican president, all the while holding firm on core principles. And I tell you, if you think that these Trumpists, I'm talking the people, the full-on Trump supporters, if you think that the bond that they have with the candidate is in any way broken, is in any way impaired by a moderation and by a shift I'm telling you right here, right now, no, it's not. No way, no how. Why? Why? That's simple. Can I use a fat kid as an example? Okay. If you're a fat kid, I'm sorry. This might hurt your feelings. Fat kid goes to school every day. You know who the fat kid is, by the way? I'll tell you. I'll give you a little foreshadowing. The fat kid is most Republicans. Okay? Most Republicans. The fat kid that goes to school every day. And school is run, by the way, by CNN and MSNBC. They're the cool kids. And what happens? Well, the fat kid goes to school and nobody wants to be friends with the fat kid. That's right. And all the cool kids on the playground, you know, MSNBC and CNN and you know, all the people in Washington, you know, cool, inside the beltway, drive-by media types. Who do they want to hang out with? Well, they want to hang out with the popular girls, the popular people. And so I'll tell you what happens here. Because what happens is the fat kid, once in a while, there's a new kid that comes to school. And who is it? It's a Mitt Romney. And he's expecting Mitt Romney to come in and help him out. Hey, help me out, man. You know, you're new. You're kind of one of me. You know, we're both Republicans, you know. You're my candidate. Stick up for me. And what does Mitt do? He capitulates. He gives it up. He ends up wanting to ingratiate himself with the cool kids, and he doesn't stand up for the fat kid. Why do Trump supporters love Trump? Because for the first time, as far as they can remember, Trump came into school on the first day, took the fat kid's hand, and looked the bully square in the face, and punched him in the nose. That's it. And that is a bond you cannot break. We come back, I want to talk about Barbara Streisand, who I want to punch in the face, and I'll tell you why. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, as an added spot tonight, I just wanted to let you guys know that we are subjugating our entire show to Sam Nation because apparently he's right. And the rest of everyone is wrong.
All right, we're back. We're back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC, reporting to you from deep behind the orange curtain from, as always, an undisclosed location. That's right. It's for your safety. I gotta be honest with you. The last thing you want is to have me in your midst. Well, you know who's not going to be in our midst anymore? Barbara Streisand. Well, she's conditioned it upon Trump winning the race. We've added her to the list. We've been keeping track of all the goofy liberals that we're going to be losing come November when Trump is elected. Barbara Streisand now threatened to move where? Not Mexico. Not Mexico. You would think by how, well, the level of apologism, is that not even a word? I just made it up. But anyway, there it is. You'd think that all these celebrities would want to go right down to Mexico City and set up shop. And what am I? I feel like I'm the lone supporter of Mexico City, by the way, because it's one of my favorite places. True story. But no, Barbara Streisand has threatened to move to Australia. That's right. Barbara Streisand and the Thunder Down Under. Why Australia? The cliche, of course, is Canada. So I give it to her for being original. But I think that she's all miffed about how Siri is mispronouncing her name. Remember this story a few weeks back, how Siri... Well, Siri is pronouncing it Streisand. You know, and Barbara's all bent out of shape about it. You know, she even called Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, and you know, whined to him about how her name is pronounced Streisand with an S. You know, that's a lot of access. We here, of course, on Sam Nation are a little less privileged because Siri changes Sam Nation to insemination. So, of course, it's maybe not all inaccurate. Because here, what do we do? Well, we're not going to inseminate anybody, but we do try to inject some common sense and reason into the political debate that is going on. Yeah, who else is leaving the country? Yeah, should we do an update? Al Sharpton, good riddance. Samuel L. Jackson. Why are actors J-Law? Yeah. She wants out if Trump's elected. Whoopi Goldberg, well, of course. Rosie O'Donnell. Well, you remember when Rosie said that? Yeah. You know, this was Trump. This was primary Trump, you know. This was when Donald Trump was still a lot of fun. He said, well, we'll get rid of Rosie. Oh, I love it. Now I have to get elected because I'll be doing a great service to our country. is Rosie likable at all in any way, shape, or form? I'm just curious because she was kind of a big deal in the 90s, right? It's a big deal. She was on what show? What was that show that she was on? Where? Yeah. Yeah, what was the her own show? Was it what was it? Yeah, and was but was she kind of, was she still her? I mean, was she obnoxious on that show? I never really watched it. What was it like? Oh, yeah. So she was kind of well. So all right. So her she was a political activist back then too. Well, anyway. And Whoopi Goldberg, well, I mean, we all remember her from The View. And it's silly when people on the right do it. It's silly when people on the right do it. I mean, you know, when they threaten the world, this, you know, if Barack Obama's elected, you know, we're gonna leave. And the fact of the matter is, we are such a great country that it takes a lot to destroy us. And when it's grandstanding, one, of course, but it's also really just it's just feeble. It's feeble and it's diminishing to our country because we are institutions. We are governed by a great constitution that is very resilient, even when we have total demagogues and dictators come along who want to turn it all upside down. The fact of the matter is that it's crazy that we've been able to survive 8 years of Obama, so I think we can survive 8 years of Trump, even if you're a pessimist. But I want to get back to an important point that we ended last segment with because I think it's important. I explained to you why Trump supporters like Trump, why they have a bond, why they're bonded to Trump, and why none of his moderation is going to lose that segment of his support. I'm already getting hate mail. I likened it to a fat kid. Okay. I mean, we all, and I said, look, Trump is the first guy who came to school on the first day. He showed up, right? He declared his candidacy for president. And so he puts on his Republican hat. He walks in and immediately begins saying exactly what's on his mind. And in fact, what's on the minds of a lot of us out there. I mean, you've got to admit, even if you think he's a little crazy, didn't he say some things that you were really happy to hear? That you agreed with, but were even taken a little bit aback by? We are, conservatives are, the poor, abused, bullied fat kid at school. The rules are all set by the political establishment and the media that enables them. And when other Republicans have come along and deigned to step in and sit at the wrong table, what happens? They get beat up. What do you think happened to Mitt last time? Or 2012, what was that all about? He got bullied right off. He got bullied right over to the loner's table. That's right. He got laughed out of town. He got called terrible things. And what do I fault? What do I fault him for? What do I fault him of? Not fighting back. That was Mitt's big crime, in my opinion, is that he just turned the other cheek. And Bush, gosh, what a dummy. For 8 years, they went after him. It was nonsense. I can't even say the real word. And he just went radio silent with some stupid, Christian? He turned the other cheek, but whatever it was. And there we were, even when it came to policies that we supported, and he wouldn't defend them. He wouldn't defend himself. He'd just smile and take it. And along comes Trump and takes the bullies on in the media and punches them. And then, I feel like that fat kid, he just took me by the hand and there it is. Everything's going to be okay. I got it. Now you all know me, and so I'm able to fight for myself. So while I may be that Republican fat kid, I can pack a punch. But many of you know this is true. And so when the media, when the drive-bys get out there and say, well, now all this tack to the center, this moderation, this flip-flopping of Trump's. You talk to a Trumpist and you ask him, hey, what do you think? How do you feel? His people say, he has to do that. And it's a ridiculous premise, besides, because all you have in the media here is discussions of, well, Trump, he's so extreme. And he can't just rely on 40% of the vote. He's getting 40% of the vote. It's his stalwart supporters. He needs to bring another 10% to the table to make it happen. If what's happening now isn't that move, I don't know what is. He's doing it. It's effective. It's working. And the polls will bear it out. And finally, I'll tell you this. I don't believe any of these polls. These polls are just nonsense. First of all, how many Trump stickers do you see? How many Trump signs do you see rolling around LA? Here in Orange County, this is supposed to be conservative country. I don't see any Trump stickers. I don't see any Trump yard signs. And you know why? Nobody wants to put a sticker on their car because they don't want to get abused. They don't want to get their car keyed. We love our cars. It's California. Of course. I'm going to put a Trump sticker on your car. So, this is it. There's a silent majority out there that's not being counted. They don't want to even go on the record with the pollster. All right. We have some news starting Monday, September 12th. Guess what? We have a new time slot. Call KABC and complain, because we are moving to weeknights, 7 to 8 o'clock every evening. I'm going to be breaking down the events, not just at the end of the week. Well, we're not going to do that anymore. We're now going to do it at the end of every day. And that's, we're going to bring to you the content that no one else is talking about. So, Monday nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'll be with you at 7 p.m. on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I can't wait! All right, tomorrow, 6 p.m., Sunday, I will be back. Talk to you then. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.